Welcome everyone to this week's episode of In the Know with Kat Bobineau. Today my extra special guest is Dr. Jeffrey Hubbard, who is a medical doctor out in Dallas, Texas. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely. So could you tell the audience, what type of medical doctor are you?
Well, I'm a general practitioner by training, but my specific focus is that I'm what I like to call an integrative preventionist. So my ideology on health and wellness is that in general, we can prevent most diseases, specifically those chronic diseases that typically affect our communities the most, by diet and nutrition, exercise, and just generally being knowledgeable and aware of the things that are, you know, causing these types of illnesses to develop in the first place.
Okay, so what type of illnesses are you meaning when you say that? What type of illnesses do you think we are combating by this?
Well, the big ones, heart disease, diabetes, cancer, autoimmune disease, just generally advanced aging. You know, I'm not saying that everybody's supposed to live to be 100 years old, but I don't think that our bodies should be deteriorating at 55 either. So just kind of helping people to understand how to create longevity in their lives and just generally live a healthier, more productive existence.
Okay. So what got you interested in that type of field?
To be honest, I've been exposed to quite a bit. My mother was into some different alternative modalities and stuff like that. So even though I have the traditional allopathic training of an MD, I like to kind of create my own treatment plans and treatment options as far as different things that people can do to address their issues, address their illnesses, and what have you.
Okay. Because personally, when I know when I go to the doctor, or some of the people I know goes to a doctor, and we tell them what might be ailing us at that moment, there's a lot of prescription writing. And so what you're saying is you're not into that prescription writing, here, take this pill, this is what's going to help your ailment. You're more into the natural hepatic way of dealing with someone's illness.
Yes, I think that's a very good way to describe my general approach. However, I do think that pharmaceutical medications have their place. Mm-hmm. I think it takes a lot of discipline and responsibility as far as addressing your health illnesses and, you know, the different things that may be going on with your body. And sometimes you need to be very aggressive in how you manage them. So sometimes pharmaceutical medication is required up front. But, you know, just in general, I think that our bodies find it very difficult to process and metabolize pharmaceutical medications. And so to have somebody take farms for, you know, an extended period of time and not have a plan to get off them, or not have a plan to, you know, put themselves in a better position as far as getting off the medication and finding some other alternative modality to, you know, combat the illness, I think that you're putting your body in a compromised position.
Okay, I can understand that. Because there are people who, especially, let's say, diabetes, who are on insulin for their entire life, or they might have complications of the diabetes, which has different problems or brings around different health problems, and then they're on a different medication for that. And so what you're saying is your method is to hopefully wean them off these types of medication, or at least to the lowest dose possible?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the objective would be to actually create a program, a plan to actually get them completely off the medication, or either to supplement the pharmaceutical medication they've been prescribed with maybe an herbal remedy or another type of modality that they can do on a regular basis that doesn't cause bodily harm over time.
Okay. So do you think some of these pharmaceuticals, although they are well-meaning and may help at some point, eventually will cause harm later on?
I just think you have to take into consideration that our liver and kidneys are responsible for metabolizing and processing these pharmaceutical medications. And since they are synthetic in nature and not, naturally made for our bodies, then we're putting a lot of stress and strain on our organs to be able to process them. So, you know, imagine somebody who's my age, 34, and gets a diagnosis of hypertension, and they're prescribed, a beta blocker or a diuretic that's going to help them with their blood volume and hopefully consequently result in a decrease in blood pressure. Think if you take that for 30 years and the patient's 64 years old now, and even if their blood pressure is being monitored, they've still been processing 2 or 3 pills a day for 30 years. That's a lot to ask of your liver. That's a lot to ask of your kidneys amidst all the other things that you're asking for them to process.
Okay, I get that. So we can kind of change directions for the moment and go into medical school. So is your mother and her way of, what's the word I'm looking for? And her way of dealing with medical problems, is that what made you want to go to medical school, or was there something else that made you want to go?
It was definitely my mother.
That's cool.
She kind of identified very early on that I had a healing spirit, right? So I just accepted that. I was really into robotics and engineering and all of that type of stuff. That's what I thought I was going to do.
I'm sorry. Say it one more time. You were breaking up at that moment. What were you going to do first?
Oh, I said that I was interested in engineering and robotics.
Okay.
And I thought that's what I wanted to do until I got to like advanced calculus and differential equations and stuff like that. I realized that it wasn't for me. So I just kind of took my love of science, biology, chemistry. Those things were very intriguing to me in high school, and just my general love for people and my, you know, desire to kind of interact with people on a regular basis. And I said, well, hey, you know, mom has already kind of told me that I would be good at this from her perspective. Seems like, you know, the things that you have to know and understand to be a medical doctor, seems that I kind of have an affinity for them. So I gave it a shot. You know, and once I kind of did my research and found out all that's entailed in getting into medical school, just decided to go after it.
So for audience sake, what does entail going into medical school? What did you have to do?
Oh, man. So you have to take your prerequisites in undergraduate school. I actually found out later that you don't even have to complete a bachelor's degree. You just have to complete prerequisites. I wish I would have known that. I might not have a bachelor's degree at this point. And then after that, you know, you go through the process of filling out your application, MCATs, recommendation letters, XYZ, and then you actually get accepted into medical school. And then medical school is 4 years of training, 2 in the traditional lecture, reading books all day type style, and then your third year is what's called a clerkship year. In your clerkship year, you go through the major disciplines in medicine, which is surgery, internal medicine, pediatrics, psychiatry, OB-GYN, and family medicine. And so after you do those, then you go into more specific training your fourth year. Those are going to be your electives and things that you might feel like you want to go into, and just, you know, some other core requirements situation. And after graduating, or receive your licensure, you have to go to an intern year, or what is considered your first year of residency or on-the-job training. Mm-hmm. And then depending upon what discipline you decide you want to go into, you have X amount of years in kind of like on-the-job training.
Right. So from what I understand, if it's something like general practitioner or family practitioner, it might be less years of training. But if you're going into like surgery or being a neuro medical doctor, then it's many more years of training, right?
That's correct. So the minimum is 3 years.
Okay.
1 intern year and 2 residency years. So that would be for things like family medicine, internal medicine, pediatrics, psychiatry, and a few other disciplines. Something real labor intensive like neurosurgery or plastic surgery or something like that, it's a 7-year program. So anywhere from 3 to 7 years, some programs are even 8 years, depending upon like how they feel they want their students to come out after they finished.
Ooh, that is a lot of
Yeah, it's a
that
lot. That's a great way to put it. It's a lot.
is a lot. From what I understand or what I've heard is plastic surgery is like one of the ones that's really as many years as possible because you got to get it right. You got to make this
Oh,
person
absolutely.
look how they're supposed to be looking.
Absolutely. It takes a lot to understand how to appropriately conduct a facelift, let alone the confidence to do it on your own in your own, surgical center or what have you. Imagine the type of training Ben Carson or somebody like that had to go through, to be able to separate Siamese twins and that are conjoined by the head. Like that's a lot. Just to understand the human anatomy and physiology enough to conduct that surgery, but also to know all the potential pitfalls and stuff like that. So I used to be a real fan of Ben Carson.
I was about to say, his work that he did, I
I really am.
don't want to get too
I'm
much
having a
into
hard.
that, but
I
him,
think I'll give his Goodwill or something like that.
yeah, like his work as a medical doctor, I applaud him tremendously.
Absolutely.
His work after being a medical doctor, not so much.
Yeah,
But
his political concepts are just they're baffling. I don't get it. But, maybe it's not for me to understand or whatever.
I will tell you like I tell other people, and this was actually told to me by a coworker. Her name is Jenny. It was a couple years ago, and it was somebody who I think we had a serial killer out in the loose. And I was told her, I just don't understand how someone could be a serial killer. Like, how could you take someone's life and be okay with it? Multiple people's lives and be okay with it. And she said, you'll never know because you don't have the brain of a serial killer. So you'll hurt yourself trying to put yourself in their shoes and try to understand how they think and why they think this way. So don't let yourself go crazy trying to understand a serial killer, and don't let yourself go crazy trying to understand what Ben Carson is doing at this moment.
I totally get it. And so I've just had to change my whole attitude about it because it doesn't, me getting frustrated and trying to understand is not going to fix the issue.
No. Trying to understand his point of view and why he's doing what he's doing is going to frustrate you and just take up time in your life that is undeserving of it. So that's how I feel about it.
Absolutely.
But enough about that guy. We can come back to you
You got
and
there. No,
would you say?
I said we digress.
Yes, right. Back to you. So before you went to medical school, when you were in undergrad for your bachelor's, what was the determining factor? I think we talked about it a little bit. It was the math that said robotics and engineering is not my thing. I'm going to go into medicine.
Yeah, I just didn't want to. I mean, I didn't want to enter a field where it already was seemed to be difficult for me. The daily hustle and bustle of being an adult and paying bills and handling bills is enough. I wanted to go into something that I really loved and that came natural to me, and that I felt like I would want to get up every day and do.
So, as a general practitioner, what does your daily life look like?
Wow, so things have kind of changed. I've kind of gone off the beaten path and done things on my own. I have a bit of an entrepreneurial spirit, so I have begun creating some different organizations and businesses that I think will be beneficial in our current healthcare system. I don't want to disclose all of the details just yet,
Okay.
but I had recognized a lot of things when I was involved actively in the healthcare system, from a perspective of diversity and health disparities and just a multitude of things that I thought were challenges that I didn't see anybody actively trying to tackle. And so I am in the process of putting together some businesses and organizations to do just that. But typically, a general practitioner is going to be the type of individual who you see in a primary care fashion. That individual is going to be the person that you go to the clinic to see when you have an ailment or you just need a general checkup. So when I was actively doing that, my day started of 8 o'clock clinics, and we go to anywhere between 5 and 6, depending upon the patient load and all of that type of stuff. So, I mean, that's essentially what it is. And each session, you try to keep between 15 and 20 minutes so that you can see all the patients, and there's not a, a waiting room full of people. And that's one of the issues that I find to be very challenging is how do you provide access to so many people who need care?
Right. And
And
I was just going to question that, the whole 15, 20 minute thing, because I feel as if there are some ailments and some people who only need 15 minutes. Maybe it's nothing, it's not as bad, or you can diagnose it very quickly. I mean, you come in with a broken leg, I'm sending you to a surgeon, or you're going to get that wrapped. That's understandable. Sometimes it's a little bit more intricate, but then you're in this rush to go see other patients. So how do you manage that? How do you manage the fact that some people are a bit more intricate and you can't, you or you shouldn't only give them 15, 20 minutes?
Well, I mean, that is the art of medicine. That is the practice of medicine. It is extremely challenging. I mean, just the science and the pharmaceuticals and all of that stuff is just the tip of the iceberg. Really understanding your patients, understanding people in general, understanding the sociology and all of the issues that people face on a daily basis, contributing to issues that they're coming in to discuss, is something that you have to keep close, in your heart and mind, because those are going to be a lot of the reasons why people are sick in the first place. But you try to be personable, you try to be prompt, and to the point without being, without rushing people. But unfortunately, that's just a real big challenge, and some people are really good at it. Others, it's a struggle. But I know that, some of my peers and colleagues, they have a really hard time keeping their bills paid, keeping things going, because they have to see so many different patients just in order to actually keep the lights on,
So, you're telling me this profession that's very well respected and as it should be, and this is a profession that we tell young kids to go into because they can soar to new heights and get this high paying job. There's doctors out there who are struggling paying their bills as a doctor.
Absolutely.
How is this?
Absolutely.
Like, break that imagery, because I know that's an image we think. You be a doctor, you're gonna get paid. So what is the deficit there? Why are we having doctors that's struggling?
Okay, well, let me just kind of break it down from my perspective.
Okay.
Without going into extreme detail, I am in significant educational loan debt. And so you got to take into consideration that you got to pay for school. So, I got a master's degree as well before going to medical school. So I had to pay for that, and I had to pay for medical school. And then, there's other expenses, living expenses, other things that you have to take into consideration that you take out loans for as well. So, one of my mentors is a general surgeon, makes really good money. But when he got into medical school, he already had a family. He already had 5 children. He already had a lot of responsibility, So he's 50 something years old, still paying back his medical school loans. Just because he had other responsibilities as far as what he needed to do with the money as he made it. And just in general, the insurance companies make it slightly challenging, because everybody doesn't have great insurance. Everybody can't get the type of reimbursement that they'd like to get as far as what they bill. So, like in the state of Illinois, where I went to medical school, they were averaging approximately 3 months to pay you for what you billed, and they were averaging approximately 30% of what you billed. So you can imagine how challenging that would be if you're 3 months behind and you're only getting 30% of what you build.
Why are you only getting 30%?
Well, because Medicaid and Medicaid dollars are state funded. So, you know, the ability to pay doctors for the services that they render to the patients who need it most typically aren't in the budget.
Right.
So, you know, you might bill in January and then you might get paid in February when new state funds come in for the month. So that kind of is a glimpse of how it could be challenging for doctors to do what they're doing.
What about medical insurance too? I know that you, as a doctor, you have to pay your own medical insurance to practice.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, malpractice insurance.
Or malpractice actually. Insurance.
Absolutely, absolutely. So that is taxing. Of course, you know, the trend in medicine now is for people to join in groups and to join other hospital systems. The idea of you having your own private practice and private clinic is kind of really dwindling because it's just not very cost effective. It doesn't make business sense.
Right.
And so I think also another big thing is that we spend all this time learning, you know, medical physiology and anatomy and pharmacology and histology and all of these different disciplines, but we don't get much training on the business of medicine, you know, so you still aren't very astute at how you make and retain wealth, you know, so
right.
That's another thing that you kind of have to learn as you go. And so, you know, people make mistakes, you know, things don't always go the way that you intended for them to. So, you know, you just kind of fend for yourself.
I think that that is pretty true across the whole board of STEM, you know, except for maybe people who go into math. But you go into science and even tech and engineering, even though there's a lot of money in tech and engineering, there should be some aspect where they're teaching you business or finance or how you're going to take what you're reciprocating as your paycheck and build on it. Because there's a lot of people who don't know it, even outside of STEM, in art, you know, history. If you're not taking a class in business or finance and understanding what you need to do or economics with your money, there's a lot of people missing out and mismanaging their money.
100. That's the absolute facts. And to be honest, that's across the board, really, in every discipline except for those who do get a financial background or
right.
economic background, you know, and kind of understand the way money works. Or, you know, some people's family members are just very affluent and well-versed in the language of money. And so, you know, people get, you know, certain types of educational tools and keys as they're growing up about how to manage their funds and how to invest and, you know, how to, you know, establish a savings and how to prepare for retirement and all of that type of stuff, you know, and just in general, that's not a very commonly taught thing.
No, it's not. It's not. I mean, it's one of the things that should be taught and I think is now being a part of Common Core is they want to have that. But it's just like a glimpse of it. You know, it's not a big dive in and you're not going to fully understand it. But anyway, we're getting off subject again. Let's go back to what you're doing, especially outside of being this general practitioner who's now doing more natural health. What do you do outside of being a doctor?
Oh, man, I do a lot of stuff. I love to travel. I love conducting philanthropy. Just recently, I was in Mississippi and had the opportunity to speak to some students about their health and wellness and just bringing them into a better understanding of their personal anatomy and physiology and all of the type of stuff that I'm intrigued about. And I just remember when I was young, certain conversations and situations with different individuals who I ran across in my journey through the educational system. And, you know, certain things that people say, certain, you know, things stand out.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that's what kind of really intrigued me about everything that you're doing, Kat, is that, you know, people who are in STEM, people who are in, you know, terminal professional degrees, we have to be able to show ourselves approved and to be able to give back in different ways. And I think the biggest thing is to just show people, hey, just because you're formally educated and have been to school for a long time, it doesn't mean that you're not cool. It doesn't mean that you're not sociable. It doesn't mean that you're a nerd or a brainiac. It means that you're disciplined and you want it. And now that you have it, you can do whatever it is that you want to do and be whoever it is that you. And so I think specifically students of color need to see that, because we get caught into this whole mindset that, oh, if you're a doctor or a lawyer or, engineer or architect, that you kind of have to fit into this particular mold of what you see in society. And I just want our younger generation to recognize that you can do and be how whoever you want to do and be while being educated and having a career field that you feel like is suitable for your intellect.
I mean, that's one of the big platforms that I like to speak about, especially is this media concept of who a doctor is or who a STEM professional is and what we're doing and how we interact with people, and it's erroneous for the most part. Now, to say that there are some truly, truly nerdy people out there who are in this discipline is a lie, because I know some who actually might fit that mold you see on TV, but
Absolutely.
it's not majority of us. And
No.
there's people who like to have fun, who like to travel, who do sports, who play instruments. All these things are accessible. It's just, it makes you multifaceted. No one, I like to quote Shrek and say, everyone's an onion. There's many layers to you. It's not just this one outer layer you see.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that should be definitely the objective, is for your profession and your outward persona just to be the tip of the iceberg, and that nobody should be able to really judge you based upon how you look. And I know frequently people don't take me very seriously because I might have my fitted on, it might be backwards, I might have on some Chuck Taylors, I might have on a graphic t-shirt or whatnot, and this is not the standard attire of a physician, period. And I kind of like it because it allows me to hide in plain sight. There was a scenario where my business partner and I were meeting with a gentleman, and he had a massive stroke right in front of us at Panera. And I recognized that he was in trouble. We initiated CPR and we contacted the paramedics. And it was just really funny because, staff members of Panera are trying to tell me how to do CPR. And I just wanted to be like, hey, dude, finally, I think after the third or fourth time where the guy was telling me, I didn't need to breathe air into him as I was doing palpations, I was like, listen, I know what I'm doing. I kind of had to bark at him. In order for him to get out of my ear, I'm trying to process all the different stuff that could be happening to this guy. I'm trying to figure out what I need to tell the paramedics when they get there, to kind of maximize, everything that's already being done. And I'm having to deal with this guy who, in his own right, thought that he knew what he was talking about, but you don't, and you don't know who you're talking to. So,
And
in those situations, it's kind of interesting
we hear these stories
because,
all the time. Well, not all the time, but we're hearing more and more stories, especially people of color who are physicians or even nurses, and they're trying to do help someone. Like, I'm literally helping you and trying to save your life, and you have outsiders telling you you're wrong or they don't believe you're a doctor. And it's
or who you say you are, right?
why don't you believe that? Because I don't fit the mold of what you think a doctor should look like.
And that's the bottom line.
It's sad. I
That's the
mean,
bottom line.
I get
So
I
that's what's so
often,
powerful.
yeah, I often get told that that I don't look like a scientist. What does a scientist look like? Like, how are you gonna tell me what I'm supposed to look like?
And that's what, to me, that's what makes your initiative so powerful, is that the only way that that's going to change in society is if we start combating it with showing individuals like you and I who have the credentials and the intelligence and the foresight to present ourselves and show ourselves approved so that other individuals can see and start to develop their own, visual perspective of what these individuals look like. It's just been such a stereotypical type of field, over, history, that we have to really work hard to change that. Work hard to change exactly what it is that people are perceiving when they think of, a biologist, a physician, engineer, a mathematician,
All right. So we are out of time. So if there's anything you want to tell the audience or how they can get in touch with you, especially your YouTube channel, you can let them know now.
That's awesome. I appreciate that. So in general, you guys can reach me at DRJB, my last name, Hubbard, HUBBARD, MD at Gmail. So that is my Gmail account. Any questions, concerns, other opportunities, if you would like for me to speak, if you would like for me to participate in any way possible, I'd love to be of assistance. And you can just search my YouTube channel, which is Dr. Jeffrey B. Hubbard, MD. Please like, subscribe, share all of the videos. I think there's about maybe 20 videos so far, and many, many more to come. I have a lot of different ideas about what I want to do as far as the channel. And also all of my nonprofit that's soon to come and the business that's going to be in conjunction with the nonprofit. You can find out all of that information. I'll be sharing all of that on YouTube as well. My personal Facebook is Jeffrey Be the Solution Hubbard. I think if you just search Jeffrey Hubbard, you can find me as well. So
So you want people to
that
find your Facebook because I don't give that one out. I don't need But, whatever is clever. Was there anything? Did I cut you off? Was there anything else you wanted to say?
No. That's pretty much all I wanted to share was just, once again, Kat, thanks so much for the opportunity to participate in your show. You're doing amazing things. I
Thank
wish
you.
you continued success in all of your endeavors. I definitely want to come back once I get everything up and off the ground, and discuss that in further detail. But yeah, as far as my communication, everything goes, yeah, you guys can reach me on YouTube or Facebook. Soon to come, I think I'm gonna do an Instagram and a Twitter. So I'll link all that together at some point in the near future. Oh, and I do write personal health plans and personal wellness programs. So if you are interested in that, once again, email me at Dr. JB Hubbard, MD at gmail.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being on the show and telling us your story and what you are working on. So I really appreciate that.
Thank you once again for having me, and I look forward to future endeavors.
Awesome. And thank you to my audience for checking in this week and watching In the Know with Kat Bobineau. Tune in next week where we'll have another special guest who's going to talk about their pathway into STEM.